Welcome to 10,000 Posts. It's the show about how everything is posting. That is, at least until we completely run out of posts. There has been a post shortage recently. WhatsApp and Facebook were down yesterday for a long time, which meant that everyone sort of migrated to Twitter. But yeah, there was a shortage of posts, and the same way that there was a shortage of fuel, shortage of food, shortage of everything. As always, I am joined by my co-host, Phoebe Roy. Phoebe, how did you find the shortage of posts yesterday?
Well, I'm very disappointed. I kind of thought that we were going to wake up today to news of, you know, the usual suspects.
Facebook is
having been rounded up and placed in Guantanamo. I thought that's what we were going to wake up to. I thought it was the sign. I thought it was the harbinger. And it didn't happen. So sad.
If there's anything that we've learned from the aftermath of the Iraq war, it's that no criminal, like no true criminal will be brought to justice. Like that, you know, the dastardly people that prevented all the fun posts happening on Facebook, the kind of birth of a potential new minion meme, they will never be brought to justice. They will be allowed to continue their dastardly ways for a lifetime, or at least until Facebook gets shut down. We are going to there have been a few people who've messaged me about whether we're going to do an episode on Facebook and all the stuff that's been happening, plus the Facebook leaks and everything. We will be doing that. So keep your ears tuned for that, because I think it'll be a good one. I've got some, we're getting some guests lined up, which will be a fun and smart episode. Now, speaking of fun and smart episodes, we are going to do one today, and we are joined by a guest. Someone who's a very good writer, someone whose work I'm always very excited to read. It is the writer Shirin Kale. You might know Shirin from all the features, GQ, Vogue, bunch of other places. Shirin, how's it going?
It's going really well, thank you. I feel very invigorated after the great internet shortage yesterday.
Yeah, how did you find it? Was it were you kind of at an odds in terms of where you would post things, or did you actually find it pretty chill that, you know, you didn't have to see what was going on online?
I'd taken a really cute picture of my cats that I wanted to put up. So that was quite disappointing, actually. Personally, for me, I did have to wait to put that up. But, you know, last night when I was falling asleep, I was thinking God, it's going to be so great in the morning when there's going to be all these notifications and it'll just be a big rush of them all at the same time. So I had that to look forward to, and that didn't disappoint.
Did you find a new reverence for Instagram stories where there's 30 different stories in one? You know, that thing where the top of, you know, the bar, which shows you how long the stories last for, where they're just dots. I usually skip over them, mostly because the person who does it on my timeline in it anyway is Caroline Calloway. But this morning I did watch all of Caroline's Instagram stories, because I realized that, you know, very, very an important part of online culture.
I unfollowed Caroline a while ago. I was a big stan for a while, but it was just too much. Just too much content.
You've missed a lot of stuff. Did you unfollow her before she painted her floor white while she still had stuff on the floor?
Oh shit! No, I've actually really enjoyed that. I was there. I was sort of there for the greatest hits. So, what was the name of that girl that wrote the essay about her?
Oh yes, yeah.
I felt like I was sort of I got into it when the season was really, really good, and then I backed out when the season got a bit boring. So I don't really feel like I'm a true.
Yeah, head. No, I don't check on very often, but every so often there will be a gem, and one of the gems was when she painted her floor white while there was stuff still on the floor. So she painted around this closeness that she had, and I was just that's the most relatable thing, because if I could afford to paint my floor, then I would definitely do it that way.
Oh, I think that's superb. I really rate her for that.
Shirin, I very much admire your ability to abandon things when they start getting boring. I can't do that. I see consuming any and all culture as kind of ordeal. And if I'm no longer interested, then I've got to stick with it till the bitter end.
What's a good example of that? Because for me, it's what was Prison Break, right? I watched all, during the lockdown, I watched all the seasons of Prison Break, despite the fact that it got really bad after halfway through season two. And so I watched up to five. It was the biggest waste of my, such a big waste of time. And yeah, I think I just, it was more just I had to finish it.
I'm experiencing that right at the minute with this Netflix show called Good Girls, which starts out really good and really fun, and it's a fun idea. But for some reason they decided to stretch it out over 4 seasons, and it no longer makes even the slightest lick of sense. They've started doing like flashbacks, like half of each episode is a flashback because they don't understand what it is, what it's about. They kind of generate these like dumb subplots, I've dedicated so much time to watching it now. So we've got to finish it, and like we're approaching it like it's a kind of sort of labor that has been imposed on us and has not been imposed on ourselves. So like, you know, kind of every evening it's like sort of gets to kind of 9 o'clock and one of us is like, babe, it's time to watch an episode of the show.
For show that we
it's
don't
time
like.
To get it's time to get through it. It's time to get through it. And then sometimes we're like, should we just watch 2 tonight? Just try and get it out of the way quicker.
Yeah.
But then that's too much. And yeah. So what I'm saying is, if you do watch this show, watch the first 2 seasons and then quit.
Yeah. That's my always thing. Like, just like, don't watch past season 2 of anything, which is like why I went to go see the new Sopranos film.
Is it good? I really want to see it.
Well, it is a good film, but here's the thing. So I went with my partner, and like, she is a really big fan of The Sopranos and she's watched everything. However, I've only ever watched like the first season. So I kind of understood what was going on, but there were these moments where like the cinema like erupted into laughter and I was just like, I don't understand. What did Tony say that's like this funny, right? And it kind of comes down to this thing about, okay, you have to like have watched all the seasons in order to like understand these references. So if you watch it without, then it basically is this very kind of beautifully shot but like morose like American Italian gangster movie in New Jersey, which is like a fine story but very slow. And I think, yeah, but it kind of holds this hugely different significance for people who have like who are big fans of Sopranos. So I think it's like,
I've never got on with The Sopranos. I feel like Tony has got like just so many red flags, and I feel like he should go to therapy. That's what I think.
That's right. Men would rather go to therapy and do crimes rather than choosing one of the two. That is Italian male privilege right there.
Yeah. Do you mind white male privilege? How dare you?
I think we should talk about an honorary Italian. I don't know why he's an honorary Italian. I'm just like deciding.
He's not an honorary Italian at all. That's not how we're framing him.
I am personally framing him as an honorary Italian. If you want to cancel me, then cancel me in the comments. We're talking about Salt Bae. Let's talk about Salt Bae first before we get on to like the other kind of big thing. Like, we're going to talk about Next Door and like for the remainder of this episode. But Salt Bae is a character that I have been fascinated with for many years. When he became viral in 2017 or 18, there was some viral videos going around on Twitter actually of him basically like taking steaks, cutting them with like a long sword or like at least like a long knife. And then, I don't really know how to describe it, but he kind of like tucks his arms in and sprinkles of salt. And it became just like this huge viral sensation. There were like, just as of all these viral sensations that happened like post 2015, it kind of became merchandise very quickly. People were doing their own impressions of it. They were like, you know, all the kind of food videos. I think like Gordon Ramsay tried to do like his own Salt Bae thing. So yeah, he's like this very interesting character. His name is like Nusra, and I don't know how to necessarily pronounce his last name, but Google Translate tells me that it's Gotcha. That's it. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yes. Yeah, so apologies to any Kurdish people for whom like I mispronounced that and butchered the pronunciation. But we're going to just call him Salt Bae throughout like the rest of this segment. Since his 2017 viral moment, Salt Bae has started like a number of restaurants throughout the Middle East, and now it's come to the West. I think he has a restaurant in New York, and I think the London one where this viral thing we're going to talk about, I think the London restaurant is where it came from. So there was a viral video of him doing his kind of like standard Salt Bae thing on a steak that was kind of covered in gold, or like it was at least encased in like a type of like gold resin. And then there was another tweet that went viral, which showed a receipt of a food order in which one of the things people pointed out to is that one can of, like, I think, or like a few cans of Red Bull cost £14. So basically there were these like exorbitant prices for like what was seemingly like quite normal food. But yeah, people are still going to his restaurant and people are still paying like an obscene amount. And like they're posting their receipts online to be like, what? I can't believe Salt, like the food at Salt Bae's restaurant costs this much. And yeah, it's kind of like opened up some very interesting questions about what is Salt Bae? What is he as like an influencer? What is like this, his restaurant in terms of like the broader experience economy? And like to start off with, I guess like Shirin, I wanted to ask you, what are your like general thoughts on Salt Bae? If you have any, for that matter.
I think he's the finest scammer to ever live. And I have like such a deep respect for him. Like if I met him, I would shake his hand, maybe like kiss it. Like, I just think it's like fucking brilliant what he's doing. It's like, yeah. It's like the, like, first off, right, like, I'm Turkish, I know he's Kurdish. But like, I have no idea what this dude is cooking. Like, that is just not any sort of Middle Eastern cuisine that I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, it's so, it's just bizarre. Like, I don't know if you saw the video of him like the other week where he gets like a loaf of like Tesco bakery baguette, and then he like rips it up into pieces, and then he like arranges this like sort of tower of bread, like the sort of thing you might feed pigeons with in the park. And then he puts that on top of all the raw meat, and then he just like pours boiling oil over it. And that is like the meal. Like, it's just obviously just disgusting. And I have no idea what that even is. Like bread and oil, like bread, oil and meat. It's just crazy. But like, he's persuaded people to pay like 140 quid for like a Tesco baguette that's been like doused in oil. Like,
yeah,
I just think it's like the most perfect, like victimless crime. I think he's amazing. I honestly, like, I have so much respect for what he's doing. Like, I really, long may he continue.
So he's a good grifter.
He's like the best grifter. Yeah, like if you're like dumb enough to go and pay for that, like you deserve it.
I'm just looking through like some kind of Google images because I was trying to find like what kind of meat he actually cooks. And I realized that like he also like, in his New York restaurant, he invited a bunch of like YouTubers, including a YouTuber called Mr. Beast, who is famous for like giving away lots of, well, his videos are like of him giving away lots of money, but basically like he kind of gets a lot of money given to him by like outside investors that are kind of a little bit shady. And there's like been a lot of controversy over like how his business actually works and like how exploitative it is. But in any case, it's kind of like, it's very interesting that like the restaurant, his New York restaurant anyway, like the people who really want to go to it are like grifter YouTubers who are like, who kind of want to create this experience where like you just get mad. I think like when the gold steak thing came out, one of the things that I was thinking about was that like Salt Bae kind of really understands the internet and kind of what goes viral now, because when he went viral, I guess by accident, if you want to call it that, like it was just because it was just like, it was just kind of funny what he was doing, right? Like this is a guy in like a tight t-shirt and like, you know, some Ray-Ban, some aviators, who's like, just like chopping up meat and sprinkling salt on it, but in this very sort of like performative, pronounced and very like almost theatrical way. You know, but now it's kind of like what he understands about virality online is that the way to do it is just to get people as mad as possible. And like, what better way to get people mad online than to like get the most narcissistic people who are like posters and influencers and get them to post receipts of extremely expensive food onto Twitter, where you sort of know that people are just going to get furious at him.
It's like he's financially dominating them in a weird way. It's almost like this sort of like quasi erotic like color to like the fact that people are posting those receipts. It's like, yeah, look at me, I pay £14 for a Red Bull, like, you know what I mean, like punish me, Salt Bae. There's something very weird about this whole thing, you know, like everyone's getting off here. I think this is completely consensual. Everyone's just being shagged in all directions by Salt Bae and his gloves and his salt.
Yeah. I mean, you could read a lot into that. Phoebe, what are your thoughts on Salt Bae? Do you have any? And how does he make you feel?
He doesn't really make me feel much of anything because I don't eat red meat, so I'm not interested immune in steaks. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm inoculated since birth against Salt Bae and his powers. Like his spells do not work here because I have no interest in stake the preparation of the eating of the buying of etc. I think Shirin's right. I think that it is a victimless crime because he's just taking money off very rich people. I don't think you could really argue that there are people. I don't think you could really take the sort of the Twitch grifter line that there are people who like might be really kind of financially struggling and they're giving money to Salt Bae because they feel like it's a kind of form of activism. No one thinks that this is activism. I mean, I assume no one thinks this is activism. What I think it does is it exposes the point of the experience economy and of experience posting in a way which I don't suppose it necessarily intends to do. But this is something that I've been thinking about for a while. I think it'd be really interesting to do a longer episode on it. And the reason I was thinking about it was because of that. You know that restaurant which is the table suspended in the air?
Yes.
It's just to take pictures. It's just to say that you've been there. And it ties in with the thing that we were talking about with Jathan, with the company that lets you buy other people's Instagram stories. So it looks like you have been to the kind of the latest postable experience. And it also ties in with some, you know, I feel like Salt Bae is a real kind of tying together of the narrative threads on this show. It also ties in with what we were talking about many, many months ago with Clive about how cultural signifiers have sort of turned into this kind of performance where it's not actually about what you're interested in. You just have to show yourself to have done it because that's part of the experience of being young-ish in a big city in the UK. I certainly remember when I was a teenager, people who went to museums and galleries to see art exhibitions were people who were interested in art, and it's now an element of the experience economy, and this is why all exhibitions are set up in such a way that they can be easily posted about in a way that they definitely weren't before. There has to be a sort of posting element to it. And I think that this is what is happening at Salt Bae's restaurants, because there are places that you can go to eat which are eye-wateringly expensive, and at a certain point you are not paying for how good the food is, you are paying to be able to say that you went there. And if you are an influencer, it's part of the performance of sort of lush, voluble greed and overconsumption. Because there's absolutely no way that a dinner ever would need to cost that much. It wouldn't matter. It could be like a unicorn which is like slaughtered in front of you, and there's no reason for it to cost that much. And also, if you're seeing a unicorn, it means you're a virgin. So, checkmate.
Yeah, you're right. And I think, I don't know, like, I also sort of get this impression. Well, I mean, number one, I think I get this impression that, like, Salt Bae, like, understands all of this. And, like, just again, as I'm, like, looking through Google Images, again, trying to look at what food he actually makes besides steak, it turns out he's also trying to become an MMA fighter as well.
Amazing.
Like he wants to kind of be a UFC fighter. And it kind of, to me, this sort of just indicates that what he understands really is like theatricality. And it makes sense because I think I read on like a Turkish newspaper that he, before he had to leave school to like support his family's business as a butcher, he used to do theater. So he's a theater kid. He understands like theatricality and performance, and like at the same time, I think, I don't know, there's almost this cute kind of like parasite, you know, the movie Parasite, this kind of like the narrative about how to that, you know, resistance and like action against the rich does really come through like scamming them, but also like scamming them in a way where they kind of like actively participate in it. Like there's no one who goes to his restaurant but doesn't know that they're being like scammed to death, right? Like, yeah. But like, there's a reason they do that. There's a reason because they, you know, because what they want isn't the steak. What they want is the receipt that they can then post on Instagram, or the kind of Insta story that kind of tells them that, oh yeah, Salt Bae came and like sprinkled salt on my steak. And yeah, it really did cost that much.
It's the sense as well, I think, of being part of an internet joke, right? Like, you know, there's so many, like he is a joke, like no disrespect to Salt Bae. I think he's amazing, but he is an internet joke. Like, he's ridiculous. He knows that. He leans into it. He wears a costume. He knows he looks like absurd. And when you go to the restaurant and he comes out and he does the performance with the salt, like, you're all participating in this giant internet joke. And you know that when you put it online, your friends will get it and they'll find it funny. So there's like an element of it, which is like,
yeah, that's a good point.
There's an element of it, which is that you're performatively torching money, right? You're like showing people, you know, that you've got so much money that you blow it on dumb shit, like £140 Tesco baguette. But then on top of that, you're participating in this colossal internet joke, and actually people really like that. Like, we're also connected now, like jokes go around the internet, you know. Like, I'm thinking about like Bean Dad, like a year ago, like there'd been the opportunity for me to participate in some way in that joke, I would have done it because it was absurd. Like, this is actually quite democratic, it's quite accessible. Like, you go to Salt Bae's restaurant, you pay the, and then you're part of this giant internet joke, and you can share that on your socials and it will live forever as a bit of content, like an asset.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of reminds me a little bit of like the kind of like ice bucket challenge back in the day, right? The idea that like, well, everyone, again, that was kind of like one of those very classic like internet memes that suddenly kind of like makes its way into the outside world, like as this sort of like offline performance, which is then fed back into online. You know, and that was like a long time ago. I think that was what, 2014 or 13 or something like that.
I remember reading somewhere how few people actually either realized what the ice bucket challenge was for, and also how few people actually ended up sending their sponsorship money to the Lou Gehrig Foundation. Because quite a lot of it was, oh, people hating on the ice bucket challenge, it's raising awareness. But it wasn't raising awareness. The only thing it was raising awareness of was of people wanting to post themselves, which I think was very prescient. I also agree with the idea that with Salt Bae, you're in on a huge internet joke. It's like you're kind of minting your own NFT.
Yeah, and this is what I was going to say, but as time has sort of gone on, like that type of like demand for participation has become like both more intimate and also like more absurd as well, right? So it's kind of like, you know, you kind of want to be involved in like an influencer performance, but where it goes from like ice bucket challenges to like meetups to like what, you know, the kind of like flash mob thing that used to kind of be like a thing. And now it's very much like wanting to participate in what are like essentially kind of very, you know, and I would kind of say that like Salt Bae, even though he's kind of definitely more famous than most of his contemporaries, is still like somewhat of a niche meme. I don't think that like the majority of people would know what Salt Bae was. Maybe I'm wrong, but it's kind of just like you kind of want any sort of proximity to like celebrity, and like particularly celebrities as memes. And the thing that you want from celebrities as memes is not for them to be human, but to be the memes. And this is what Salt Bae understands, but like he is kind of being contracted for a particular performance, and his whole business model like involves him doing that. And that is kind of where the value comes from.
Kind of reminds me of those meet and greets that you go to with celebrities, you know, they're in like really depressing like conference centers and like, you know, and you go there and it's like, everyone knows what they're there for. You're there to get the photo of them doing the pose, whatever it is. And it's,
I went to one of those ones.
Yeah, they're really depressing, aren't they? Because the people, everyone's like aged a bit since they were on the TV show, and no one looks like quite as good as they did on the telly. And it's all, it's all a bit weird.
I went to one of those, which was a Power Rangers one, and I met the Red Ranger. but the Red Ranger looked nothing like he was on TV. Because he had aged, and also like he just didn't have a particularly good time on the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers show. But I was really upset because I was like, no, that's not the Red Ranger. That's not, you know, that's not who he is. And you could just kind of tell, because I wasn't the only kid who's like said it, right? There were like lots of other kids who were like, no, that's not the Red Ranger. Like, you know, he's too kind of, you know, do you know what I mean? I don't want to be like mean, because like now I sort of know the context, but I can only imagine what it'd be like to have like a bunch of like 8-year-olds get mad at you because you don't look like what you do on the TV.
Yeah. But Salt Bae though, like he performs it though, doesn't he? Like he, no one knows that Endo's way disappointed, like, because they know what they're going for, and they're going for the meme. Like if Salt Bae came out on the table and he wasn't wearing the gloves and he wasn't wearing the sunglasses and he didn't do the salt thing, everyone would go fucking loopy.
Yeah, and like, what's the point?
Yeah.
And I think like, it's kind of, you know, one thing that is also rising up, and we've spoken about this on the show a couple of times, is also like this new genre of like accidental internet celebrity that kind of inevitably ends up in a PR hold anyway, right? So like people like Jackie Weaver, for example, who like accidentally go viral, but like immediately they're kind of like pounced on by PR people who not only like protect them, but also ensure that they are always their character, right? So like Jackie Weaver has never really spoken to about like how councils work or how like town parishes and stuff work.
Can you imagine if when she's like presenting Have I Got News For You or whatever, she just like commandeers the whole thing just to explain like in detail the minutiae of like how like, local parish councils actually should be run. I think that'd be very funny.
But this is what she used to be like, and now when she's the meme, it's like she's very aware that like, no, like my job isn't to explain how like local democracy works, despite the fact that like it's really, really important that people understand how it works. It's now like you have to, like she understands that you have to be the meme. So that's why her whole brand now is like, what's it like to be like a woman with like a leadership position, and what's it like how to navigate like men who are trying to undermine your authority the whole time, right? It's almost like she's kind of almost transformed into a kind of wellness girl boss, like one of those wellness girl boss influencer types. And I think that like Salt Bae is very much like, I it's not to say that he didn't kind of like, it's the same trajectory, but I think it's very much like, he's not a restaurateur. He's a meme who just happens to have like restaurants, and that restaurant like has a particular clientele that really doesn't care if they were like eating like raw meat, as long as like they got the salt thing that they could tell their friends about.
Salt Bae, I think at least though, will have a longish career, because he's going to be able to replicate that in all these different cities all around the world. And all they want from him is the same thing. They want him to come to their table and do the salt thing, and they'll get their videos and they'll put it on the gram and they'll get the likes. Whereas Jackie Weaver, like, Jackie Weaver's done. She knows that. Like, she must lie awake at night thinking, how long can I possibly ring this out for? Do you know what I mean? Like, you know?
I don't know. I also kind of think that she had a quiet life that she was sort of probably happy with. And like, she's had this kind of like arc, celebrity arc. And I don't know whether she's actually like hungry for that to happen more. Like, I don't know, like, to me, she doesn't strike me as someone who, like, wants an actively, like, court celebrity. I think it's, like, she enjoys it, and it sort of happened to her, but I don't think she'll necessarily go out to seek more of it.
No, I don't agree with you.
I'm not sure about that. Yeah, I think that, like, now she's got it, she wants it. I mean, she didn't have to agree to the book deal. I think she's got a podcast now.
Oh yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, they all like become podcasters, don't they?
Yeah, and when everyone knows that is an ancient serious art, and they can't just have upstarts thinking.
You've got to remember how to hit the record button. That's a very difficult task for a lot of us today. So we know like where the convergence ends. Like we know like the end game here is that Jackie Weaver goes to eat at Salt Bae's restaurant. And that's like, you know, I'm going to lay that into existence. I think that's going to happen. And it's going to be horrible for everyone except for like people who love using cry laugh emojis.
I think you are underestimating the power of British micro celebrity through either reality TV or now like the kind of the updated version, which is through unwitting memedness. I mean, because like the distinction is that the reason that Jackie Weaver, who I was about to call Jackie Walker, who's somebody completely different, the reason that Jackie Weaver became well known and became a meme at all is, and I said this at the time, and I know it's a super buzzkill thing to say, but it's because of absolutely unthinking, sleptwalked into surveillance culture. It's like there's without a surveillance culture, without the assumption that everyone is constantly being monitored, everyone is constantly at risk of being recorded and having themselves shared possibly hundreds and thousands of times without their explicit consent, is the reason that we have the Jackie Weaver meme. I mean, Salt Bae was performing, you know, before he got memed. There was some active participation from him, and I think it is a sort of a different situation. Salt Bae did not originate from the highly unpleasant truth that nobody has any kind of meaningful privacy. Individuals don't have meaningful privacy. Famous people and rich people and powerful people have meaningful privacy. We don't.
Yeah. Yeah,
and but I think Shireen's right. I think that she must be absolutely thinking every single day about how to keep this going. And I think, yeah, don't underestimate the nature of the British micro celebrity. I mean, I think people forget that, like, or rather, I think maybe people don't even properly remember that the reason that we've got Katie Hopkins is because she was on The Apprentice and she didn't even win.
Yeah, true.
And yeah. So I reckon there's a possibility of kind of provocateur.
Yeah, reactionary.
Jackie Weaver's future.
I'm looking forward to seeing her on the Dan Wilson show on GB News, where inevitably that's going to happen. You mentioned surveillance. I thought that might be like a good way of segueing into our next topic. I think I'm getting better at segues. I don't think I'm quite there, but I'm getting better. Let's talk.
You're very good at segues. Thank you.
Thank you. Now I just need to remember to hit the record button when we begin the show. Okay, let's talk about surveillance. This is something that we've sort of like referenced a little bit. It is the app Nextdoor. I downloaded Nextdoor at the beginning of the pandemic, and now I just kind of am very annoyed by emails, but initially it was being used as a way of like coordinating mutual aid efforts during the first lockdown. I used to use it to kind of like find out what people needed in terms of food and like do deliveries because I had a car. But now my Nextdoor is largely filled with people like scolding each other, various iterations of there's a suspicious man walking around our neighborhood. He's wearing a hoodie and that's it. Lots of stuff about, people using, like people are putting stuff in my bins and I don't like it. Also, there was like some duck drama recently. Apparently like one of the ducks from the local pond, was terrorizing a cul-de-sac. and the duck comes to the cul-de-sac every night and just starts quacking, like without like, you know, quacking just like at really bad hours in the morning. And it's really annoying people because they're like struggling to sleep and the council won't do anything about this rogue duck. So which is to say that I feel like Nextdoor has some real gems in it. However, it also has a lot of problems and we should really talk about that. So I guess like before we start, I wanted to ask both of you, do you use Nextdoor? What are your experience with it? Do they have their own iteration of the terrorizing duck story?
I love Nextdoor. It's like, it makes me feel like really superior to other people, which I think is really- I mean, that's actually pretty much 100% why I like it. And when I go on Nextdoor, I think like, God, everybody has so much time. Who are all these people that are like losing their minds over like the most insanely trivial stuff? Like, what you were just saying about ducks. And I also like, I sort of really enjoy it on like a sort of like quite profound level, which is that I'm like, wow, like people are just like kind of awful, aren't they, when they live together? Like, we all just become like, just like, I'm kind of obsessed with like NIMBYism as like a concept in British life, like this sort of like knee-jerk reaction to like any sort of development or building or anything happening in that area, like always pushing back against it. And I feel like Nextdoor is just like the hotbed of like NIMBYism, like where I live.
Yeah,
like people are like losing their minds because they're building like affordable housing on a road and everybody's like getting like really hysterical, and then it's just like, you know, it's just like all these people who have no idea how obnoxious they are. I think that's what's so good about it. It's like you took The Office and then you distilled all the characters out of The Office and then you put them into an app. that'll be next. Or so I enjoy what I enjoy playing on it because it makes me feel superior to other people, which is obviously a really pleasurable feeling. And then I also enjoy it because like often there's like pictures of people's cats, which I also like. And then occasionally like someone's giving away some furniture that looks quite nice. So like it really hits all my bases.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, Phoebe, what are your experience with Nextdoor? Do you use it?
I don't use it, although I have to say the feeling superior does sound quite good. So I'm maybe being talked into it even as I decry stealth surveillance. I know that at least one of my neighbors has it because you occasionally see them kind of on their doorstep, like peering at like a car or someone that they don't know.
Yeah.
And then like peering at their phone and then peering back in a kind of a they are checking to see if somebody is suspicious or not. I sort of associate it as a kind of way of creating almost like a kind of social media platform, but out of Mum's Net. That's kind of what I understand Nextdoor to be. And I just think it's really interesting. And again, this is not a new point, and it's something that I've said and have said repeatedly, that I do think it is interesting how, in terms of kind of cult sort of standard cultural bogeymans, people. Bogeymen rather. bogeymans. I'm just going to start saying that now. The plural of men of man is mans, and I'm going to say that no matter how silly it makes me sound, because that is very much not my vernacular to lay claim to. That there's this kind of very sort of standard bogeyman of the Stasi, and everyone's worried about the Stasi, but British people would fucking love being in the Stasi. They would they'd absolutely love it. What they object to about the Stasi is that it's foreign. That what they want is a way of grassing up their neighbours for stuff and for making sure that no one with a hood over their head, no matter how cold it is or how much it's raining, ever comes near their house.
What they want is to be given their own patch, their own like military patch, and told that they are also part of the territorial army and doing the nation's bit. So there's a neighbor in the cul-de-sac where I live in who bought a pair of binoculars and uses those binoculars to write down license plate numbers. And every so often when I'm like, you know, outside or like, you know, I'm taking out the bins and stuff, he'll come up to me and he'll say, but like, oh, did you know this car with this specific license number was outside your house last night? I was like, what do you mean? As in they were outside my house. And they were like, no, like they were kind of like a bit further away, but they drove past your house. And I'm like, okay, Gerald, I'm not entirely sure like what you're trying to tell me. It's like, oh yeah, I just thought you'd know, you should know, you know, just in case. I'm just doing my bit for the community. And I was like, okay, all right. Thank you for your service, Gerald. Salute. I am wearing my blue poppy in your honor. But yeah, like the kind of like neighborhood watch stuff he started doing during the lockdown because he was just really bored. And I think that like this is not kind of an uncommon story, and I think that Nextdoor really kind of like takes that impulse of the kind of like suspicious suburban, like yeah, like the suspicious suburbanite or like townie, and like creates an app specifically designed for them. I was on the Nextdoor Wikipedia page, and like the funniest thing. So every Wikipedia page has a sense of that has contents, and this is what the this is how Nextdoor's content page is listed. Number one, history. Number two, usage. 2.1, racial profiling.
right.
Number three, partnerships. No, 3.1, police department. Government, there's like disaster relief and so on. But I think that like if your kind of Wikipedia has racial profiling right at the top, I think you might like you need to like reconsider. Like, don't update the app. Maybe just get rid of it entirely.
I think these things are by design. I think that the idea that that it's sort of a kind of unfortunate byproduct of being used by British people. But like the racialized and the classed element of a broadened surveillance culture has been amply covered, and who is deemed to be a sort of local threat, anything which is kind of shoring up this kind of it's very interesting. It's kind of digital libertarianism, because it's a kind of it's sort of shoring up of a kind of castle doctrine, but like not quite the castle doctrine, because that's very much about minding your own business and being a freeman of the land. And this is about this is about every single thing that happens around you is your business, and you are at liberty to be recording and documenting and participating in surveillance. Because the reason that we wanted to talk about this in the first place was because one of the things that came up at, and I know we don't talk about the Labour Party, so sorry, I'm going to put 50p in my Labour Party jar.
Yeah.
Before I talk about this, was this incredible idea for like fighting crime, with it being policy for there to be neighborhood WhatsApp groups. And first of all, I would love to see how that policy is being implemented, because WhatsApp is free and most streets have, like my street has a WhatsApp group, which I never look at. How is that a policy? It's not even a case of increasing funding for anything that might arise from the neighborhood watch WhatsApp groups. It's not a policy. It's a suggestion to have a really, really annoying group chat.
What's interesting about it is that basically we're all just a nation of snitches, aren't we? Right? That's what Nextdoor is. We're all just like snitching on each other. But there's like this higher authority that we all want to be snitching to, which I guess is like the police, maybe. I don't know. And so like Nextdoor is kind of like a slightly more acceptable form of snitching. Like most people have got the message now that you're not meant to like call the police on your like black neighbors who are washing their car.
Yeah, but you can tell everyone else.
But you can go on Nextdoor and like chat shit about them. You know?
I have a few Nextdoor bits that I found while I was doing research. I'm gonna read some out. This is not from like the UK. This is like just kind of like this is from a blog which like mostly kind of publishes racism on Nextdoor. But there's some kind of funny bits in there. So one of the posts reads, "Everyone here is racist. Stop being racist," in like big capital letters. And there's one which is, "Here we go with the fucking fireworks. They start them earlier and earlier every year. I just don't get the fascination, and I really don't get why nothing is ever done about it. Ugh, it feels like it's going to be a long spring/summer. And then the reply is, "It's the Cambodians. It's who have an obsession with them. I live in the Highlands and I'm surrounded by ... And then there's a third one which goes, "Oh dear, my property taxes," crying emoji. "I already approved the first one. This one is happening fast though. Year before last, the superintendent said that they didn't have any money. Only good thing about raising Roseville's property tax again is it helps keep the riffraff out," and then shrug emoji. These are all like examples of basically just like complaining about like poor communities and poor people of color in like you know, the local area. But what I found interesting about all of them, because like there are some similarities, like my local Nextdoor has like much better moderation than it used to, but one of the similarities that I found was that like the way in which people like basically spoke about people of color on this app was very much like it, you know, I think I Shirin, like I think you kind of like nailed on the head, which is it's not kind of overtly saying we need to report this to the police, because I think most people sort of know that like, number one, you can't really do that. And number two, it's quite obvious what you're saying when you try to do that. So instead they're trying to kind of like use different language in order to basically express the same thing. And I think like the impression that Nextdoor gives is one of this kind of very familiar community, not least because the interface that it uses is very similar to Facebook. Even just like in terms of how you comment and how you like posts and like how you respond with emojis and everything. But it also kind of like presents this idea that like if you're on Nextdoor, like Nextdoor is kind of the encapsulation of your kind of local community. So in posting, you are actually partaking in these kind of like active decisions in your community. And what's like crucial about it is, especially like comparing to how kind of like main social media is used, is I think Nextdoor gives this impression that like by snitching, you are actually doing something practical for your community. And at a time when I think like most people like have sort of accepted, at least like in the Western world, that you can't really do anything to like change the state, and like things are getting worse, and like there is no kind of immediate answer of like how to like resolve that, at least on an individualist level. On Nextdoor, it sort of gives you this idea that you can change your community by kind of actively posting. And for them, like it's a highly virtuous thing to basically say that like there's a suspicious teenager walking around, and by the way, the reason he's suspicious is because he's wearing a hoodie, or that like, you know, you're kind of snitching on your neighbors because you think that they're like nicking stuff from your bins.
Yeah, I also think like we shouldn't underestimate just like how our national psyche is just about like being a busybody. And like, like in America, like, you know, they like form militias and like take up like arms and stuff. Like at least they have like, you know, the self-respect to do things properly. Whereas people, you know what I mean? Like people just like curtain twitch, you know, and then
yeah,
they go on their little app and then they complain about their neighbors because they don't have the balls to just like go outside and like confront them. Because
yeah,
like we're just so conflict averse in this country. Like we can't deal with conflict or like resolve things in any sort of like.
I think also in America, like the part of the whole like gun culture is also like the collective culture around guns. So like it's this idea that even if you like confront someone with a gun, like there will be people who will defend you just because you have a gun and you like stand up in theory for the Second Amendment. There's like kind of like idea, I think a lot of, and, you know, and we see this a lot of cases when like, you know, in the aftermath of like shootings and stuff, or like, you know, in the aftermath of like Trump process where like you had armed militias like there, which was the idea that like, oh, you know, they're just kind of like defending their rights of the Second Amendment. They kind of know that they'll have a community that will back them no matter what. Whereas I think in Britain, like that doesn't even exist, even like where people kind of agree on politics. Like because we're such an individualist country, it's like, yeah, if you want to like beat up this guy, you can do it, but I'm not gonna like, I, you know, I will support you like in theory, but I won't kind of like defend you in practice. You're on your own for that.
This is a country of negative solidarity.
I was just thinking again of my neighbor Gerald, who like for a week was like threatening to slash someone's tires.
Wow.
But he like,
and come on, that would have been entertaining to see.
Because the car wasn't parked opposite his house, but rather like it was kind of, it made it slightly inconvenient for him to kind of take his car out. Like he had to go slightly slower than he would usually. Bear in mind that like you should only be traveling 5 miles an hour on this road anyway, but he wanted to go 10 and like this car wasn't going to let him do that. So he was like, you know, this guy is blocking my driveway. You know, if he's there like one more day, I'm going to like take out his tires. And I was just kind of thinking to myself, like, Gerald, if you take out his tires, how is the car going to move? Like, you know, it doesn't make sense. And like, what I realized was that he was never going to do it, but really what he wanted to do was like, I think he had this British tendency of like imagining, like he wanted to imagine himself like, taking the law into his own hands because like the police were incompetent. And like, you know, the Tory council has been taken over by like political correctness, which means that like, you know, they won't do anything about the car slightly blocking his driveway. Yeah. And I kind of think there's like that fantasy element as well, but like, it doesn't, you know, you can't really have that sort of like collective solidarity in a country as individualist as like this one.
I guess it is an expression of collective solidarity, right? Because it's just the gentrifiers app. So that everyone's kind of affirming each other's right to gentrify, you know?
Yeah.
And complain and whinge. And I mean, like, obviously it's bad and problematic and it represents everything that's wrong with this country, but also like, it's very funny. Like it's like, worry about that guy wanting to slash tires. I'm like, that is like entertaining content. Do you know what I mean? outside of your bubble as well. So like, you're really like,
yeah,
two different things there. Like, I would have relished that. Like, that's brilliant. That's
not I kind of disagree in the sense of like, I think initially it was very entertaining, but then what I sort of realized was that, especially like with the kind of like presence of Nextdoor, and about having like a very material effect on this kind of small community I live in the sense that like, you know, my Nextdoor now is largely used to kind of like subtweet or like subpost about neighbors for like fairly mundane things. And what it really like reinforces And you know, what I see is like, it's not Nexter on its own that necessarily is the problem, but it's like how it fits within like a particular type of like surveillance apparatus, right? So like, you know, this is kind of indicative by like the Amazon Ring, that like, you know, that is kind of like a common doorbell that like lots of my neighbors have and lots of people in this country have. It's about like local Facebook groups where like, as Facebook decided to like change its algorithm to kind of like, you know, what's the right term for it? Like to kind of like benefit or to kind of like prioritize local communities. It kind of, you know, it kind of created a sort of system where local groups become a conduit for like misinformation. Like one of the things that kind of came out in the Facebook leaks earlier this week is the idea that like Facebook was very aware that like misinformation about local communities was being spread rapidly through its kind of like its properties, and like it was refusing to do it because like it wasn't conducive to its algorithmic changes. You know, and I guess it kind of like touches on this much broader thing that we spoke about in the first segment, which is really this idea that like Nextdoor kind of represents more of a descent into the surveillance economy, and one that like seems difficult to kind of like get out of. And when it kind of hits the neighborhood at like this very local level, it's one of those things where like you can't sort of ignore or opt out of, right? Especially where like Nextdoor becomes this kind of like stand-in for any type of like community solidarity. Like, you know, one thing I was thinking about and like, you know, just talking to people over the past few weeks is the idea that, you know, the mutual aid stuff was like this really common thing in local communities when the pandemic first started. And I don't think like many of them really are sort of like functioning the way that they were back in 2020. Like they've either all vanished or they've kind of become like real kind of shells of themselves. And like a lot of the time, like, you know, while that kind of like material mutual aid has vanished, the kind of like WhatsApp groups and Nextdoor groups and like the Facebook communities and stuff, like they're still very, very active, but they're now sort of either being used to kind of push MLMs like and like pyramid scheme products or to shit on neighbors.
Yeah. I mean, I had to like exit my like neighborhood group because it's just like the notifications are just like insane. It's just like torturous to have that many notifications on your phone all the time. And also, yeah, like they always devolved into like discussions about government policy. Do you know what I mean? And then like everyone was,
yeah,
beefing with each other about that. But yeah, I think, look, like there's been evidence to suggest that, like, you know, that people actually do pull together in times of crisis, and that it's not like people become like dog eat dog and start being horrible to each other when shit hits the fan. And I think those groups like show that impulse, like people did want to help each other and they really did pull together. But
oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But ultimately, yeah, you're right. We should all stop surveilling each other. Even if it is funny when someone threatens to slash someone else's tire.
Yeah. I mean, my thing I was gonna like say was that it's not, you know, I definitely agree with you. My kind of fear is that like as Nextdoor and just like, you know, and one thing like to bear in mind is that Nextdoor like has like is kind of forming partnerships. I think there was some news that it was trying to form a partnership with like the Met Police, but like in America, they have formed partnerships with like multiple like police authorities, including like the San Francisco Police Authority. They are like trying to get involved in like government planning around like COVID-19 responses. They partnered with like vote.org in America. And like, obviously that's a big issue of contention because of like the pushes to make sure that like, for like voter suppression, the idea that like you have to kind of like be in a property or like be registered at a property in order to kind of vote, meaning that for lots of poor, vulnerable, like, you know, people of color in particular, like they can't participate in democracy. Like, and I feel like all these things sort of point to this idea that like Nextdoor being this platform that's given so much power, like ultimately then kind of gets to decide what a neighborhood actually is. And like how a neighborhood gets to be defined, and like defined on kind of these very sort of like, not only these very online terms, but these very sort of like VC funded online platform terms, rather than kind of the actual material kind of realities of a neighborhood. So ultimately, like these platforms, while kind of providing the space for communication, are still like incredibly exclusionary and like are much more harmful, I think, in the long term to like local communities than, you know, do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like the interface with like law enforcement is obviously really problematic, right? Like it's really not hard to see that like people will start like surveilling their neighbors and then like, you know,
passing
that stuff to the police. And like, we know that the police, you know, do not actually help people safe. So that is like obviously problematic. And also it just like, we all just get swept up in this huge data dump. Like,
How best?
Yes, yeah.
How best is to control people than to like have their own neighbors snitching on them? Do you know what I mean? If need be.
Yeah.
Like, it's all very dark and dystopian.
Yeah.
There are moments of humor there that we can also enjoy.
One thing I was thinking about was your Guardian long read about the cat stealing. And like, even though it doesn't like mention, I don't think it mentions social media or like any kind of social media platforms. So your Guardian long read story, like to kind of put it in short terms, it was all about like cat thieves, right? Or like neighbors like nicking that vague area of like, you know, does a neighbor nick that, can a neighbor nick a cat or not? I realized that I was a neighbor who nicked someone's cat for like a short period of time. A couple of years ago.
Yeah.
After I read
it. It makes me very unhappy and actually reconsider my friendship.
Well, look, when the episode comes out, you can kind of like say that, you know, I didn't realize that he was involved in this until like after we were recording.
I can do like an iPhone notes apology. I've always wanted.
Do that. I feel like that's necessary. But like one thing I was sort of thinking about was like, I wonder what would have happened if that cat story happened on Nextdoor. Like, I wonder whether rivalries or anger at neighbors and stuff would have gotten worse because it was channeled through a platform rather than like within the actual kind of confines of a neighborhood where you actually like talk to your neighbors and kind of figure out, you know, the nuances of what's exactly going on.
Yeah, I think, you know, that piece, I wrote it a few years ago, but the conclusion, I think it was like pegged to a news article about this woman that was suing her neighbor for stealing her cat. And I actually wrote that article before I had two cats. And I was like, whoa, this lady's crazy. And now I have two cats. I'm like, oh my God, I would have burnt down her house today. Like, I've done a lot of personal growth since I wrote that piece. But what I think is really interesting about it is that the cats are just a proxy for like humans and their inability to actually like relate with other human beings in a sort of like sane way. So like all these people were stealing each other's cats and like people were doing like mad shit, like staking out each other's houses to try and identify the cats rather than just like ringing the doorbell and asking if there was a cat there. I guess like cats are cunning little creatures, right? So they are really cute. They do manipulate you, like, it's easy to blame it on the cat, but ultimately, like, it was like the humans that were the problem. But what I loved about that story, though, is just like the cats are just like walking in and out of all these houses and they don't give a shit about like the neighborhood beefs. Like, they don't care, like, who doesn't like who, or like, you know, who doesn't talk to this person because of this parking space dispute. Like, the cats will just go anywhere they want and then the humans just have to pick up the pieces, which I think is like very entertaining. Yeah. On a side note, I literally am so hated by the bird lobby because I've been about free roaming cats, and like people do not like the fact that cats free roam in the UK because they kill birds and wildlife. So I've received a lot of angry emails since I wrote that piece.
Oh no!
Yeah, but I stand by their freedom to roam.
I don't want to like keep Sharon's cat like hungry for too long, so like we should kind of like wrap up by like answering this one kind of final question, which is like something that Sharon you mentioned earlier just before we went into cat chat, which was about like the idea of like humans kind of finding it very difficult to relate to each other, like with the thing that you kind of found in your when you were like reporting the piece. And I wonder whether like Nextdoor is like a good example of like that kind of difficulty but extended to like digital space, right? Where, you know, I don't know, it's really weird being part of like this kind of like Nextdoor group and stuff when I haven't really had a lot of conversations with my neighbors, like in all the time, but like in the 2 years that I've lived in this place. And just like the idea that like, you know, it's really just generally like the idea of, you know, it being really difficult to form relationships with your neighbors because there isn't like really a lot of public space in order to kind of like do that. Or, you know, it becomes like increasingly difficult to like form these human relationships. So, which is like why we often kind of turn to online platforms to do so. But now we also sort of know that like by participating in these online platforms, we frame communities, or we kind of like engage in a community by a definition set by tech companies, very, very far removed from them and with very different incentives. And I guess like my kind of like way to end this, I don't know whether it's kind of the case of can we change it, but it's more this idea of like, engaging with like community or like trying to resolve problems on a platform like Nextdoor, like, do you think that it kind of like inevitably will just result in more problems or like more hyper-personalized beefs and stuff like that?
I think what the internet does is that it makes it so much easier to just behave in a vile way to complete strangers. And like Nextdoor, like, you know, your profile is not, it's not connected to like your Facebook or Instagram account where your friends will be able to see what you're doing. So you can go on Nextdoor specifically to be awful about somebody in your local area, and it's pretty repercussion free. And I just think it just encourages this sort of like really bad habit or behavior, which is like, just, you know, the tendency to be judgmental about people you don't really know, the tendency to like always read the worst into their actions and their behavior, like the tendency to like, you know, not actually engage and talk with them and try and understand their point of view, but just to assume that they are monsters. And Nextdoor allows you to do that, but just on like a very local level in your local community. And then get like all the people commenting on me, that I love reading the comments underneath people's Nextdoor posts, because sometimes like people disagree and other times people agree, but you know, you can like throw it out there and then see whether people agree with you or not. And then if they agree with you, you get like righteous build up that you often see when people are being radicalized online, people get nudged into even more extreme positions. And I just think it's like really, really damaging and dangerous. And I wish people would just use it for what it should be used for, which is like swapping furniture and like posting about lost cats. Like, that is what it should be used for, not like surveilling your neighbors and harassing them. Although, I mean, if you're going to threaten to like slash their tires, I think you should just go through with it, actually. I don't think.
but then it might not meet, but the thing is, it might not kind of like match up to the fantasy. And I think that's the thing. Like, I think he cherished the fantasy of like slashing the tires in this kind of act of just like, you know, justice, where the courts were just not able to intervene, where the police refused to intervene. He alone would be able to kind of bring back like peace and order to the cul-de-sac. And I think that like, if he had failed or if he had gotten caught, it would like have ruined the fantasy. And that might have not like ended so well.
It would have been dramatic though. Good drama.
Little bit.
Oh yeah. Excellent drama. Like, I mean, like honestly, like I kind of just want to know what's going to happen with the ungovernable duck. I need you to get back on Nextdoor and find out what's going on with the duck. I want duck updates.
Yeah, okay. So we'll do duck updates on the show. I will keep the listeners updated with like this duck that is terrorizing. That is terrorizing this corner of South London. We should end the show because Sharon's cat needs to be fed. So Sharon, thank you so much.
I have one final thought.
Yes, go for it. And then
I will permit Sharon's cat to be fed, because, you know, as we know, we support cats on this show. is that what I think is interesting is that what Sharon was saying about how it encourages sort of the worst possible behavior. And I think it's something that we see replicated in platform logic just in general, and something that we talk about a lot on this show, which is that it is something which has the texture and the pattern of being a community and being for community and for strengthening social bonds. But it actually produces more disconnection and more alienation and more atomization. So it's really like posting anywhere. But the second is that what I think is something which I think I kind of want to think about a bit more and sort of tug at a bit, is there's no real political education in this country. I can't speak for other countries. This is probably the case all over, but I don't want to, you know, make any sweeping pronouncements. And there's also no analysis of any sort of power, because we have a press and a political class who are geared towards making us all feel like we are going insane all the time. Like today, all the headlines have been like, you know, Britain, it's time to get back to work, as if people have not been working the last year and a half. And it's all geared to like any kind of attempt to analyze or challenge power in any way is dismissed as dangerous sedition. It's dismissed as wokery. It's dismissed as the politics of envy, etc. So I think that what happens is people see the salutary effects, say for example, looking across the water, the salutary effects of recording and documenting police abuses. And because there's no collective understanding of like of power structures and power differentials, it's all just about the, as Sharon said, the solidarity between gentrifiers. It's all just about like trying to kind of keep the price of the local area kind of buoyant. But there's no other real kind of understanding of mechanisms. So there's this sort of odd idea with British people that recording another person and documenting another person and spying on another person is sort of similar in affect and outcome as documenting abuses of power.
Yeah.
And it isn't. It's just being weird. It's just being a weirdo. But it's been being a weirdo in a very hyper, I don't even want to use the word normalized, but a very conventionalized way, I think, is the best way of putting it. Yeah. And that's my final thought. And now Sharon's cat can eat.
I think it's a very good final thought to end the show on. Yeah, you're completely right, as always. We should end the show. Let's end the show so Sharon's cat can get there. Sharon, thank you so much for coming on the pod. We really appreciate it. If people want to follow you or find more of your work or read some of your great stories, how can they do that?
I am on Twitter, at the Dalston Years. I know it's a really shit handle, don't ask me to explain it. And I am also on Instagram, Sharon_Kale. Which is Kale. And you can read my work mostly in The Guardian, but also whoever else will pay me. Thanks for having me on. It's been very fun. I'm going to go and browse next door all evening.
Well, great. I hope you come back on at some point soon, because it'd be cool to hang out with you again. Thank you all for listening to this free episode of 10,000 Posts. We hope you enjoyed it. You can follow me at HKizvani on Twitter. Also listen to Human Error, this show that I do with a friend of the show, Olga Koch. It's on BBC Sounds. Phoebe, how can people follow the stuff you're doing?
You can request to follow my Twitter at PRHRoy. You can follow my Instagram at Phoebe_Rosa_Holly. And you can find me and Milo's Seinfeld podcast at Masters of Pod.
Great. We are on Patreon. You can subscribe for $5 a month and you can get bonus episodes once every 2 weeks. That will be changing pretty soon in terms of episode schedules. Keep tuned for more information on that. That's on patreon.com/10kpostpodcast. This show is produced by Devon. You can follow them at Devon_unearth. You can also follow their podcast, Kill James Bond. All that stuff will be in the show notes. I will link that in. Yeah, I'll link that in the show notes. I think that's it from us. So until next time, we will catch you later. Have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.